Blog Talk Radio.
In this busy world, we're always doing two things at once. So Lysol combines cleaning and disinfecting into one convenient wipe to clean messes and kill 99.9% of germs. At the same time, this may take some getting used to. One wipe, two jobs.
I just love my unity to music, you know, particularly reggae music.
Yeah, yeah.
When all it is everyone just wants to be loved, yeah. And we no gonna be judged, all we want is love. Everyone I believe, all we want is love. We need more, we want more, need and want more love, yeah. Whether you come from the ghetto, you wanna be loved. Whether you come from the birth, you wanna be loved. Everyone just wants to be loved.
Nigeria. Dial in at 516-453-9000.
1-800-273-1133. Press 1 to join the conversation brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. Thank you for tuning in tonight. I'm really excited to go on the spiritual journey with you, and I hope you are too. Let's get started. When a diet is wrong, medicine is of no use. When a diet is correct, medicine is of no need. Ayurvedic Proverbs. The art of healing comes from nature, not from the physician. Therefore, the physician must start from nature with an open mind, by Pericles. Our poem tonight is called Expand. Expand the mind, revitalize the soul, nourish the spirit, nourish the body, whole. Wellness exudes throughout as inner work within. Give into all that is complete, inner healing. The work is to be done, healing, healing, layer by layer, revealing, light becoming the realization of one. Mind expands, consciousness rises. Higher aim, reaching higher planes, releasing buried pain. Light as air, demonstrating self-love. And the ultimate expression of self-care, knowing, growing, glowing, for wisdom flowing from within, vertically aligned with the divine, interconnected of oneness of all, now standing tall, reaching higher, now growing out of old patterns, limitations, growing tired of the old. Embracing thoughts, words, actions, creating, rising above illusion, fashioning own conclusion, breaking down barriers, holding higher vibrations, carriers of light joining together, overcoming darkness, becoming ultimately bright, shining, refining, aligning higher self, defining what is. And that's a poem by Gabrielle Bowen. Now it is my extreme pleasure to introduce our lovely and very well accomplished guest, Mariko Hirakawa. Mariko is the number one international best-selling author of the book, Personal Development, Enlightening Lessons on Leadership, Peak Performance, and Living a Life of No Regrets. She is an international speaker on yoga and Ayurveda and a founder of Visionary Yoga, a personal development company dedicated to supporting visionaries in realizing their highest vision through the timeless technology of yoga and Ayurveda. A former professional dancer as well as an Ayurvedic physician trained in India, Mariko has been traveling to India every year since 1999 to study yoga, Ayurveda, and the allied disciplines with renowned masters in their field. In 2003, the experience of working with numerous terminally ill patients caused her to apply for and win a full scholarship to study Ayurveda, the ancient Indian healing science, in one of the top Ayurvedic universities in India. Proficient in Hindi and Sanskrit, she is one of the very few in the West to have completed a rigorous 5.5-year Bachelor of Ayurvedic Medicine and Surgery degree program at Gujarat Ayurveda University. A multicultural dancer, yogi, healer, and personal development trainer, Mariko is dedicated to positioning yoga as something far beyond fitness and the ultimate technology for human consciousness evolution. Welcome, Mariko.
So great to be here, Lena. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
And I can't wait for all this to learn more about you.
I'm excited. Yes, it's such a timely time for discussing Ayurveda. I think it's very relevant to, well, of course, the whole journey of COVID. I guess we can call it a journey, and we're still in it, you know, and I think that it has so much to contribute to, you know, to modern life right now.
Yes, it does. And it definitely is something that is can play a huge part of the, you know, our you know, going through this journey well, hopefully. And as I was reading your bio, I noticed that I didn't know how you got started. So can you just share a little bit with the audience about how you got started into this, you know, this elevated journey?
Yes, well, it's a long story, but I'll try to keep it concise. It's I was actually, as the bio says, I was a professional ballet dancer, and I thought that was, you know, all from ever since I was like 2 and a half. You know, it's like it was like a one pass, one vision to become a professional dancer. When I actually attained that dream, I realized, you know, ending the day with this applause from an audience I couldn't see. It was thrilling at first, but then night after night, I started to just wonder, you know, what is this it? Like, is this the purpose of my life? Or, you know, these, you know, 30 seconds, or even like, even if it's standing ovation, it's so fleeting, you know, is this really the purpose of my life? And as, you know, as fulfilling as it felt at the time, I knew there was something more. And so it became kind of an obsession, this purpose question, like, what is my purpose? If you know, I achieved what I thought was the purpose of my life, and it felt hollow after some time. And so that question led me to actually just, I discovered yoga by accident completely, and the place I discovered yoga was a tiny little yoga studio, and it was owned by actually disciples of an enlightened master, and there was such energy in the room, and as a dancer, I really loved that there was no mirrors in the room, because I could really go inward. It was the first time I didn't have to look at the mirror and look outward, you know, look from outside in. It was really an inside-out experience, yoga. And at the very end, lying there in the relaxation pose known as Shavasana, I experienced my body as like a body of light. It was just pulsating. I felt all these networks of energy moving throughout my body. And thought, what is this? It was a throbbing light. There was a throbbing electric blue light in the center of my forehead. And so I thought, like, maybe I want drugs, you know. And so I asked the director, the teacher, what is it I'm experiencing? And she just kind of gave me a not knowing look, and she pointed to a photo, and I was like, no, I don't want a cult, I don't want a guru, I don't want, you know. But then something about this photo, you know, the woman, it was a woman's photo. She was exquisitely beautiful with penetrating eyes, and I felt maybe, I had this intuition, like maybe she can help me on my journey of, you know, discovering what my purpose is. So I went to meet this woman. You know, she lived in the Catskills, and I was very lucky. The very first day I drove, you know, I took the van up there, I got to meet her. And I have to say that the journey to this ashram, and I had no idea what an ashram was. I had all kinds of preconception, you know, and it was all shattered it was a very modern building. I thought it would be something like a zendo coming from, you know, I have come from a Japanese nationality. So my sense of spirituality was like zen, you know, monasteries and very austere. And this was very different, very modern, shiny, like a conference hall, you know, and I was judging everything, you know. But then in comes this woman and in red from head to toe, and not very large physically, but her energy was just like moving mountain, like she was a mountain of silence, you know. And I couldn't believe it, but she, after chatting to a few people who were like kind of nervous, and she just like glided, it seemed. She didn't even seem to walk. She glided right, like stood right in front of me, looked deep into my eyes, and she just said with a very deep, melodious voice, you know, "So you just arrived," like that. And I just like completely, in that moment, I really experienced something that now looking back, I realized that is actually what yoga is all about, this experience of the individual dissolving and experiencing myself as complete love. I was just like as if the skin kind of like dissolved and I just merged into all the molecules that were around me. I just lost myself completely and I just burst into tears and I was just like, what's happening to me? You know, I just felt like, and I realized it was like an initiation moment that I read about later on. So, you know, that kind of launched an entire quest for, to understand what yoga is. And when I, you know, I became a yoga teacher to try to understand this, I started to, you know, have clients who were I just started to attract naturally like people who were terminally ill with diseases like cancer, stage 4 cancer or Parkinson's. I mean, and it was very, very difficult for me to handle this, but there was a longing that came up within me that was like, I really want to serve these people, and I feel just teaching them asanas and breath work, as wonderful as it is, it's just I want to know more. And so I went on a quest really for a healing modality that would be kind of hand in hand with yoga, kind of spoke the same language as yoga. And when I discovered Ayurveda, it was just like, this is it, you know, it really comes from the same cosmological root. It really speaks the same language of the five elements. Philosophically, it's aligned, you know, really the health in Ayurveda is a foundation for to have a long, healthy, balanced life so that you can meditate and so that you can do all the practices that lead you to moksha, which is spiritual liberation, enlightenment, whatever people call it. You know, it's that experience of merging with your essence. So that's the long, sorry, it was a little long-winded, but that's really the journey I've been on. And, I ended up applying for a scholarship to study in India because I looked all over, and at the time in the United States, there were not really legitimate schools teaching Ayurveda. And so I thought, I knocked on all the doors in Indian universities, and none of them would accept foreigners, but I finally, I was really searching, so I finally discovered a university that does offer an English version of the BAMS, which is the doctoral licensing degree in India, 5.5 years long, and through perseverance and searching, I discovered a fellowship that would pay for the tuition for the entire 5 years plus a modest stipend, you know, and so that was, I started the curriculum in 2003 and I finished in, I took a 1 year break in the middle and I finished in 2010. So it was 2010. So that's a long time ago already, but it was an amazing experience.
Wow, what a fantastic journey. Like, and, you know, it just makes sense that you just kind of like, you know, you were moved over time and, you know, you went to this one thing and said, okay, what's next? And,
exactly.
You know, you've had this curiosity which led you to that place. That's just amazing.
I think a question that's like a question really like is big questions, deep questions are more than just like, it's not just about getting the answer, you know, question has the word quest in it, which means it's meant to take you on this journey, you know, and so I think it was just really purely following this thread of like, what's my purpose that led me from one thing to the other thing to the other thing, you know, and I think, you know, I'm a born seeker.
There it is. The common thread with people who are just on this type of a journey, you know, you're a seeker and you're looking for something. And we know that if we are looking and we're asking questions, you know, the universe will give us the answers that we're looking for. So that's fantastic and encouraging. So to our next question. But before that, I just want to invite people to please call in at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. And so now our question is, How did Ayurveda begin, and can you tell us about where it began and how it began?
Yes, absolutely. Ayurveda is very, very ancient, and it dates back to the Vedic era, And at the time, there was no country called, you know, India, but it is present-day India. And in India, the Vedas are the most sacred and ancient scriptures of people call it Hinduism, but I think it's a misnomer. It's really, it's the proper name is Sanatana Dharma. It means the eternal, Dharma means the eternal teachings, really. And there are four major Vedas, and the most ancient is known as Rig Veda, which is, some scholars date it as old as 12,000 years old. Some scholars say it's 6,000 years old. But anyway, it's very, very ancient. And it does mention about medicinal plants and diseases. However, the most Ayurveda really is considered by most scholars that it comes from the Atharva Veda, which is really a book about healing. There are healing incantations and chants, and it does talk about specific, you know, treatments as such. It talks about certain plants. And so the Atharva Veda is the root of Ayurveda, according to scholars. But there is a mythology about how Ayurveda originated. And really, it is not human mind created. It's not that some wise doctor or council of doctors sat down and, you know, came up with Ayurveda. It really is, it said it comes from the creator himself, Brahma. And then there is a lineage from Brahma, kind of, I guess he channeled it. He channeled it through these divine beings, such as the Ashwini twins. And then it was disseminated into enlightened sages, such as Atri and Atreya. And there are really two major clans, one would say, in Ayurveda. One is the lineage of Atreya, who eventually became, it's the lineage in which the Charaka Samhita, which is all about the internal medicine that we really think of as Ayurveda today, the treating with herbs and the chronic diseases and all of that, is really that Atreya lineage coming from Charaka Samhita. But there's also a surgical branch. Many people don't know that Ayurveda has also, it's a surgical disciplines are also there, and that is, that comes from the sage Dhanvantari, and that text is called Sushruta. There was a sage named Sushruta who was, who's actually his method of doing something like rhinoplasty, a nose job, you know, and preserving, you know, his surgical methods really are so, you know, even though they're so ancient, it is the root of today's, you know, plastic surgery and many of the surgical disciplines. So Charaka on one hand and Sushruta on the other hand, these are the two main schools, I would say, of Ayurvedic medicine. And that, you know, today's students, doctors, physicians, they still today, just, you know, are avid students of these two texts. And there's a third, you know, there's a third text known as Ashtanga Hridaya, but these are, you know, the three core texts or Bibles of Ayurveda. And you know, to really back anything up, most teachers go back to, you know, specific chapters or, you know, verses within these texts to kind of back up. And it's amazing how they can kind of correlate that scientifically to, you know, the clinical arena as well.
Wow, what great knowledge you have! Wow, thanks for explaining that to us. And I think now at this time we have a track by the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame, DJ Olasky.
I'm sorry?
A dreadlock thing, divine conception of the heart. Well, you don't have to dread to be Rasta. Well,
don't have to dread.
This is not a dreadlock thing, divine conception of the heart. Well, it's a life of a living being.
lived by the fathers of our history. Of all the ancient and prophecy, trust in the power of the Trinity. Yeah. Got to believe in His majesty. Oh yes, His lineage and divinity. The first step is sovereignty, knowing oneself true royalty. Yeah. You don't have to dread to be Rasta. No, this is not a dreadlock thing. Divine conception of the heart. You don't have to dread to be Rasta. This is not a dreadlock thing. Divine conception of the heart. Don't be afraid of your ever-burning fire. Trust in your fire and you'll never get burned. The fire that rains over heat, air and water. No water can put out your fire. Your fire gonna lift Rasta higher. Conception of the heart. You don't have to dread to be Rasta. This is not a dreadlock thing. Divine conception of the heart. Play for Rasta, yeah.
And we're back for Awakening the Goddess, and I think we have our first caller in queue. Caller one, can you please tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Peace and blessings, my sister Lena, and peace and blessings to your guests.
Thank you.
Hello. Peace and blessings to you too, Sister Bessie. Sister Bessie,
yes,
is the international caller's name nominee this year. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you, dear. I have a twofold question for your guest. In fact, I was writing down the question, and you asked the question I was going to ask, Lena.
Great mind.
So I had to come up with another question. Is Buddhism connected to the Indian form of yoga in history? And what is the difference? And what is the difference between the two when it concerns the system of yoga?
Between what's the difference between which two?
Buddhism and India's yoga, because Brahma is represented in India, as you said,
yes.
And then Buddhism is represented in China.
Well, yes. So Buddhism actually originated from India, so they're very related. And actually Buddhism originated, I believe, around the 5th century in reaction to when, you know, the Brahmin priests, when like very elite group of priests held all the power. Of course, all that power can make a human being corrupt. And so they started to, I guess, you know, get drunk on their own power. And so there was, and also the caste system, and people were feeling this disconnect, you know, and
mm-hmm.
people can sense, you know, when you know, people do have a truth radar, right? We all have a truth radar. And so if the person acting as a priest is not, you know, if they're not representing that purity, people feel it. And so Buddhism really was a reaction against the corruption of the, you know, of the Brahmins in that era. And so Buddha came along to speak, you know, about the Four Noble Truths. And so it was really a reaction against this hierarchical system that Hinduism, which is now called, you know, it's called Hinduism colloquially, but I would say the correct term, the politically correct and really overall correct term is called Sanatana Dharma, which means the eternal truths, you know, eternal principles. Really, and so
yes.
It's really not a Hinduism is not one religion, I would say, because within Hinduism there are many, there are different sects, people believe different things. It's a pantheon, you know. So, so Buddhism is a reaction from that corruption of what happened with the Brahmin priests, and the difference between, I guess, Hinduism and Buddhism is really that. Actually, in Buddhism, there is no God as such. And even though Buddha is deified, you know, he really didn't say, worship me, you know. He never said that. He said, these are the principles of life. You know, these are the Four Noble Truths. And these are, you know, and so it was more a path of inquiry. He said, don't believe what I say just because I say it. You should use your own intellect and question and inquire and, you know, compare it to your own experience, then only accept truth, you know. So I would say Buddhism is really a system of, you know, deep inquiry into life's principles. And
yes.
Hinduism, on the other hand, is really about pantheon and seeing the divine in, you know, because we as human beings experience multiplicity in life. You know, we see the many, right? We see, you know, we don't see just oneness everywhere. We see money as money. We see, you know, the religion as religion. We see, you know, we see many things in separate ways. And so to help us see divinity in each thing, Hinduism, you know, deified, such as like Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth, for example, and she's
yes.
teaching us to see the divinity, to respect wealth, physical wealth, to respect spiritual
yes.
wealth, to, you know, also to teach the principle of purity in seeking wealth, you know, not corruption. Purity, when you seek wealth through pure actions, you can really enjoy that money, and it brings good karma, you know, good feelings, right? And,
yes.
You know, for example, and also God, like Ganesha, he's about removing obstacles, and he teaches us to see the divine even in obstacles. So each god in Hinduism is really teaching us to see the essence of the divine in various forms, because we experience life in various forms. So I think each, really, and they don't conflict. You know, that's the beauty also, that, you know, people don't fight that, no, no, Buddhism is the way. No, and there's no really conflict, because they're not about, you know, this is the only way. You know, nobody ever says that. It's really find God in your own way, you know, find the divine
yes.
in your own path. And so, I believe that's really the difference, if you can say, different approaches, but the goal is the same, right? The goal is
yes.
the same.
Thank you.
And, yes,
and,
absolutely.
It was just one more thing
mm-hmm.
that I noticed that you were saying. In the Indian culture, far as their deities, women are represented.
Yes.
By the
yes.
deities.
Absolutely.
But in Buddhism, the women
mm-hmm.
are not represented as much
mm-hmm.
as the Indian culture. Okay. So you just revealed to me what I wanted to know. And you are very informative, and I just want to thank you for answering my questions. Thank you so much. And thank you for the beautiful question.
Before you go, can you tell the audience when you will be, Sister Bessie is a fellow host on the Block Talk Radio, and I was wondering if you could just share with us your next upcoming show.
Yes. The Front Porch by Sister Bessie. I will be on June the 18th at the same time, 9:30 p.m. And thank you so much, Lena. Wonderful show. Peace and blessings.
Thank you, Sister Bessie. And I really love what you said, Marika, because that there is, you know, you're free to find God in your own way. I really like it, what you said about that. And I could talk all night about that. But we have caller two.
Yes.
We have caller two in the queue. And caller two, can you tell us your name and where you're coming from, where you're calling from? And welcome to Awakening
Hi, Lena. This is Mo. I'm calling from Philadelphia.
Hi, Mo.
How are you doing? I am okay. Good. Your guest is wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have a quick question. I know Ayurveda places a great emphasis on prevention of disease.
Yes.
And Ayurveda, is Ayurveda used in any hospitals or medical centers in the United States? It seems to be very beneficial.
Yes, you know, it's amazing how far, it's amazing now that, you know, I think a lot of neuro, you know, there's really been so much interest by the, you know, specialists in Ayurvedic mm-hmm. medicine for, you know, conditions for which the current, you know, allopathic Western medicine doesn't have answers for. And
exactly.
Because, you know, the Eastern medicines really deal with patterns. And it's not, you know, I think the biochemical approach of Western medicine, while it has been so useful in, for example, coming up with a vaccine and, you know, it has, you know, taken us so far, but the biochemical model is really a medicine of dividing and dissecting the body into different parts. And it doesn't have the ability to zoom out and see the holistic, the entire whole. And I think that's where the Eastern medicines, Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and other holistic systems are so good at really seeing the capturing the language, the pattern of the body, because it's never static, right? It's never static, and it's not like you know, biochemical model can follow the movement of one molecule and its action, and it's, you know, and it can follow that, but then it doesn't follow that, it doesn't zoom out and see. That's why there's so many side effects to these, you know, very strong synthetic medicines. And Ayurvedic system uses, you know, because it uses herbs and plants, because they're living beings, they have kind of checks and balance built inside of them, you know. So if we use whole plants, then we're taking that intelligent life of that, you know, the life force of that plant, and it can do its work inside of us. And so it might be slower working because we're not extracting just the active principle from a particular plant and just using those molecules only, which have a very strong and effective and speedy, yes, but a lot of side effects. You know, it's not a balanced action, right? So that's really the difference. And for example, diseases like cirrhosis or liver, there's nothing in the Western medicine to build up the liver. There is everything there to destroy the pathogen, or, you know, but after you go through the treatment, we need to build up to help the liver cells regenerate. And there seems to be, that's really the forte of the Eastern medicines.
Wow. Very, very interesting. Mo, did you get a good answer to your question?
Very much. Yes, I did. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. And thanks for calling in, Mo. All right. So now we have a track, But before that, please call in at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation. And now we have a track by the International Internet Internet Radio Hall of Fame, DJ Olasky.
Oh, la, 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 la. And in the evening, just the way it puts the goodie on me. Ooh, makes me want it all the time. Ooh, you captivate me with your eyes, yeah. Ooh, and the way you ride it blows my mind. I can't go a moment without thinking about it. Coming every evening, it makes me weak, I can't believe it, like I've never known love before. The way you put it on the lady,
the way you put it on,
you never wanna make a baby with you. Oh, your love, it drives me crazy, like I've never known love before. Yeah, oh yeah, your loving gets me so high, you got me feeling so divine.
Rising. Oh, what a feeling when your body is close up, close up on me, and I feel the heat rising. It's showing all in your eyes. That's the love when we're riding to the sunlight. Nothing can compare to how it feels right. Feels so right.
Oh, the way you love me in the morning.
Love me in the morning.
You keep it coming every evening.
Coming every evening.
You make me weak, I can't believe it. Like I've never known love. Woman, your loving drives me crazy,
crazy.
Like I've never known love before. Oh, oh, your loving gets me so high,
so
got
high.
Me feeling so divine. I'm telling you, there's nothing I would rather than to love you forever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The way it's touching me down, I don't wanna let go.
Caller 3 in the queue. Caller 3, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from? This is Awakening the Goddess with your host, Lena Blue.
This is Kara Strength, and I'm calling out of Philadelphia. And this is an outstanding show, Mrs. Blue. Great look on Facebook Live. You have an outstanding guest, and this is a fantastic show.
Thank you for having me on. Is the linear new host of 2020. I just want everyone to know that. And Terrence, I really appreciate you calling in and giving us your support. And do you have a comment or question for our wonderful guest?
I have a couple of things to say to your wonderful guest. So first of all, kind of an off-the-wall question, but I want to ask since you're on here.
Mm-hmm.
So my sister a couple years ago had me doing oil pulling to clean my teeth, which is, I believe it's an Ayurveda type of process of cleaning your teeth. with swishing your mouth with sesame oil.
Yes.
Do you know about that? Do you think that's an effective way to clean your teeth?
I want to know your thoughts
about that.
Yeah, well, it is one of the, it's called gandusha, that's a Sanskrit word for it. And the thing about that is it's not just about the teeth, it's really about the gums, because in Ayurveda, it's about not just, you know, making the teeth white, but the sesame oil has calcium in it, which actually is very helpful. And as we get older, there is a, you know, loss of bone that happens to most people, because as we get older, there is a drying out process, and the bones get hollower, more fragile, more brittle. And so the oil is a wonderful way to keep the teeth strong, as well as the gums. We start to get receding gums, or, you know, it really does a lot to prevent gum disease. And the Western, you know, way of brushing the teeth, first of all, those toothpastes are usually sweet taste dominated, just to make it more palatable, sweet and minty. But sweet is not a great taste to fortify the gums. Ayurvedically, it is said that astringent, because, you know, astringent means there is a kind of a constriction, and we want the gum to be tight so that we don't get loose teeth, right? The teeth that start to wobble all over the place. And so, and also, oil pulling means, you know, you're pulling that oil through in between your teeth. So this is kind of a natural flossing that's happening. But not only is it flossing, which can actually, sometimes it can cut deep into your gums. Those, you know, as good it is for your removing the debris, it can kind of cause damage to the gums. So the sesame oil is a wonderful healing agent, you know, and also it builds the calcium in the enamel on your teeth, because a lot of people brush so hard they wear out the enamel. You know, dentists know this. And then your teeth start to get really sensitive. So it's a wonderful daily practice to keep both your gums and teeth healthy and building the calcium in your teeth. That answers
your question. What do you as the proper way to do it, and should I do it every day? I want to hear what your version is. I know how I've been doing it, but what would you say is the proper way to do it?
The proper way to do it would be, I think, holding, you know, the oil in your mouth and just really pulling the oil through between your teeth, kind of really pulling it forward and back, and holding it as long as you can. So sometimes it's like, I know it might be, you know, up to like 3 minutes, you know, if you can just like hold that oil, because the longer the oil is in contact with your gums and teeth, the more effective this process. So if you have like receding gums or any gingivitis or anything like that, then I think longer, you know, retention of that oil in your mouth would be indicated. But if it's just like a daily thing you're doing, I would say, you know, minute and a half would be just perfect. And you don't have to, you know, you can do this after brushing your teeth. You know, after brushing your teeth and flossing, if you really want to, you know, if you want to do both, you know, and the you can think of that.
I was doing it for like 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know. That's why I was curious about it. I wanted to ask that, because
then you're really getting,
you know, I was
the
just wondering. Okay, great. So you would encourage me to continue doing it. That's great.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And good for you. That's great. You know, so many people don't have the patience to do it. But because Ayurvedic self-care regimens do take some time, but oral hygiene is you know, the gums do wear out, and I don't think the Western way has an answer for receding gum lines, you know, except for surgery, which is not always effective. And you don't want to do surgery when you can do it with daily, you know, things. So I think you're doing great.
Okay, fabulous. And Miss Blue, are you ready? Are you sitting down or standing up or doing a handstand?
Stand, of course.
I want to congratulate Lena Blue on her ONE syndicated station all-time connection record with her 8th all-time and her 4th consecutive.
Woo-hoo.
Great job. Great job by you, Lena Blue. Keep up the good work. You're getting us all fired up. So great job. Great job by you and your guests. And thanks for the oil pulling advice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
tell everyone your show, the name of your show, and when it will air next?
Yes, my show is the Know Your Rights show, Tara Strength, and I think I'll be on in July 6th, I believe.
Excellent. Thank you so much for calling in. Great question. All right. So now we have caller 4 in the queue. Caller 4, can you tell us your name and where you're calling in from? And welcome to Awakening the Goddess.
Good evening, Lena Blue. How are you this evening, Queen Sister?
I'm excellent, my brother. How are you?
I'm well. This is Jarek, the Gifted One Thomas, calling from Shreveport, Louisiana. And I am definitely enjoying the show tonight. The topic is very informative. And I had a question for your guest.
Absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I am thinking about starting a regimen to make my body a little bit more healthy. What advice would you give to me?
Well, we have to see what your habits are now. Like what time – it's. I think the basics is like what time do you get up? What time do you go to sleep? What times do you eat? You know, what do you eat, right? So Ayurveda recommends – and don't do it as a drastic thing, but I would say gradually begin to shift, really getting your biological set with nature's rhythm. That really is the secret to, I think, not just good health, but great productivity as well. And people say, you know, I'm not a morning person and this and that, but I really believe that if you can program yourself gradually over time. So if you wake up, let's say, 8 a.m., then you want to change the clock slowly. Like maybe tomorrow you wake up at 7:30 instead of 8, you know, and over the course of 10 days, you can slowly make it so that you are up with the sun or even before the sun. So this is, do this training of rising with the sun, you will, in the beginning, you might feel groggy, but over time, that early morning is, first of all, it's great for, it's, you'll feel so much lighter in your body because throughout the day, the biological Vata, Pitta, Kapha is something we haven't talked about, but there are three doshas in Ayurveda. Doshas are bioenergies that circulate in every cell of our body, but it also circulate in the outer environment. And so early morning, we call it Vata time, and that is Vata is a combination of air and ether. And this is when there is a lightness in there. There is a depth also that you can tap into. And so that those early morning time is a great time for prayer, meditation, writing, journaling, deep thinking. So you can have a moment before you jump out of bed and just go straight into activities to reflect. You know, that's one thing. It's great for your mind. You know, it's a great time to read a book, read the Bible, read holy scriptures, you read whatever you were studying on, enhance your knowledge. And then so you want to start timing it, you know, and Ayurveda says around 10 o'clock the Vata energy is fading and now Kapha comes in. Around 7 o'clock Kapha comes in and it goes until about 10 o'clock. So Kapha is earth and water combination. This is when the trees, when the sun comes up, the trees release the oxygen and, you know, the air is rich with oxygen and what we call prana in our language. Prana is life force, and this is a great time for exercise. So, you know, do your, you know, rigorous exercise in the morning, whether it's your chosen one. You know, you're walking in the morning through, you know, park is great, running is great, yoga is great, cycling is great. Whatever it is, your chosen exercise, do it between the hours of, you know, between 6:30 and 10. There's a pocket in the day when your body has had the rest, and when you breathe that prana-rich air, you feel so energetic. And that's the best time. And then around, you know, 10, 11, you start to get hungry. So, you know, if you time yourself with nature's rhythm, naturally when the sun is mid-heaven around 12, 1, you will start to really get the hunger pangs. And then distinguishing between real hunger and anxiety hunger, emotional hunger. You know, most people, I think, you know, it's an epidemic in this country for sure, emotional eating. You know, we use food like drugs, you know, and a lot of people are addicted to sweet, sugary foods because that means we crave love. You know, sweet is about you know, we want sweetness, we want tenderness, we want that love. And then instead of, so we reach for that chocolate instead of, you know, we maybe a hug would be what we really need, or kind words, or, you know, it. So instead of eating emotionally, in fact, Ayurveda says never eat when you're emotional. Eat, you know, distinguish between real hunger and value real hunger. When you eat, the largest meal should be that midday meal, and it should, but you should not eat until you're totally full to the gills. You should leave, you know, one third of the stomach for the food, another third for sipping water, because water helps to churn that food and helps digest. And don't guzzle the, you know, liquid, but like sip it. And preferably warm or hot water, not ice cold, because that hampers digestion, hampers the working of enzymes, you know. So sip hot water with your meal, and then leave maybe, you know, some space in your stomach for the prana, for that life force, so that the stomach can churn and digest the food. You know, this is the yogic way of eating. Eat just before you're satiated, you know, and then you can stand up from the table feeling light. That is a good meal, you know. And then,
great.
So then, you know, go to bed with the sun at 10 p.m., you know, that is hard to do. I recognize we're up past 10 p.m., you know, as close to it as you can, you know, and then you'll be have very good sleep. So don't, you know, stay up until 12 when you want to raid the fridge, you know. So if you can do that, then if you can, you know, just ride this cycle, then that's an upward cycle of, you know, into good health. So there's several tips there for you.
Thank you, Mariko. So now we have our next caller in the queue, caller number 6. Can you please state your name and where you're calling from? And welcome to Awakening the God. Hi.
Hey, Lena Blue. It's Genesis Amaris Kemp. I'm calling in from Texas. I wanted to ask your guest a question regarding some Ayurvedic remedies. So are there any specific remedies that she has in lieu of taking certain vitamins? Like, I know turmeric is really good for inflammation. Mm-hmm. Ginger, like I'll use fresh ginger for various things, but I'm just mm-hmm. trying to do like the holistic
yes.
way of doing certain things versus relying on certain supplements and et cetera. So I've been just trying to get back to just eating natural and whole foods.
Very good. So what what are you looking to supplement or replace?
So one, I'm trying to replace eventually the vitamin D3, because they say that a lot of African Americans do have a vitamin D3 deficiency. And of course, like going outside and getting, you know, the natural sunlight, but too much sun is not good because, you know, the effects of skin cancer and all of that good stuff. So what other ways can you add in vitamin D in your diet besides, you know, the whole milk, because I do almond milk.
And is this really to help you fortify, like, your bones and calcium?
Yes, just to fortify the bones and calcium. And then another thing I want to be mindful to is certain foods that I eat that afterwards it leaves you bloated. So I'm just trying to, like, pay attention to that to, like, make sure I'm listening to my body, because maybe everyone's body processes and breaks down food differently. So that's another thing I'm being mindful of. So I recently started juicing, but it is a lot of work to juice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first, with regard to vitamin D, I recommend this supplement from Bunyan Botanicals, and they're all certified organic, called Healthy Bones, because that calcium is hard for these minerals, is not easily absorbed by the human body, right? And what is great about Ayurveda is that it's not just an herbal medicine, but it's also mineral and herbs. And it often these, they take, we use basmas, which are actually ash. So fine, it's like one of the tests of these basmas is like the particles should be so fine, it should like get kind of like buried in the lines of your fingers. You know how your fingers have these marks? So it's so fine, and it's also triturated, which is, in other words, for kind of mixing with various herbs to make calcium more bioavailable, You know, for example, we also have Saptamrut Loha, which is the Ayurvedic answer to anemia, and the iron is really finely, so finely tritured, because one of the problems with iron tablets is lack of absorption, right? Whatever we take, it's like such a few percentage of it is absorbed by the body. But when you mix it with certain herbs, such as licorice in this case, then, you know, it also removes the constipating properties of iron. So the Ayurvedic mineral is not just a mineral, it's mineral with herbs processed until it's bioavailable to the human body. So the healthy bones is probably, you know, since we're not in India and we cannot get the traditional formulations, Bunyan Botanicals does a very good job of really emulating those formulations with the FDA-approved herbs that are available in the United States that are certified organic, you know. So I primarily use them when I'm in the West. And so Healthy Bones, I would look them up. It's I think two tablets goes a long way. But and I think that sunshine, you know, if you do it in the early morning, the main thing is to avoid that very harsh sunlight from like 11 to, you know, 2, 3 p.m. because early morning sun is actually full spectrum light, and that is very good for you. So it's not just that sun is bad for, you know, it will create skin cancer. I think it's really that, you know, early morning light, when it touches you, it's like a blessing, you know. It's a blessing for your aura and energizing. So I wouldn't be afraid, and if you're mindful of avoiding that harsh and kind of like sizzling, scorching midday sun.
And what was the brand again of Healthy Bones?
It's called Bunyan Botanicals, and yeah, they're a wonderful brand, and I've been working with them forever, and yeah, check them out. They have wonderful products.
Okay, and then are you...
Oops, go ahead, you cut out?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you if you were on social media or anything.
Yes.
Where you share some of the information where... I could follow you or someone else who may be interested in learning more about the Ayurvedic and all of the incredible things that you've shared, because I missed some of the earlier parts of the conversation.
Oh,
and that's fine.
Hold on,
Carla. You're going to do that at the end of the program, so stick around for that, Genesis. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And we'll let everyone know who this is. She is the ONE syndicated intern. And also, Genesis, can you let the audience know your upcoming show date and the name of your podcast, your show?
So I think the next show is 4 weeks from yesterday. So I believe if I calculated right, it would be July 5th. So let me know if I got it correct, Brother O. And then the name of my show, my podcast, is called Gems with Genesis Mars Kemp. And you guys can find me on Instagram as Genesis Amaris Kemp or Facebook.
Excellent. And thank you for sharing that and calling in. Great questions, Genesis. You know, I really like that you are asking the questions about your particular body. So excellent. Thank you for calling in. All right. So now we have a track by the International Internet Radio Hall of Fame, DJ Olasky.
What brother go and live with living, huh? Choo choo.
To rise and fall is a part of it all. How I wanna make you weak will make you stronger. Oh yeah. Come take a note of this, my friend. Enough soldiers rise and enough soldiers fall. With me, Father, name is written on the wall. Do we remember the cause that they fall for? But in death there's no reward. Yeah.
one like you no face them. While you're giving it your heart and soul, and some will try to shame you for reasons uncalled for. They're like a thorn in your side. With so much to overcome in our own lives, people with their pride in criticizing.
Why?
Everything you do, anything you said, just give thanks every morning, your open eyes. So, to rise and fall,
to rise and fall,
is a cycle in life.
Caller 7 in the queue. Caller 7, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Greetings. This is Ambassador Waudet Mentuhotep L. I'm enjoying the show tonight and especially the guest. And I have, A question I had was in regards to, far as with like the cycles, far as of when to meditate and when to prepare yourself for the day and such.
Yeah.
How would that work for people who have a work schedule that conflicts with that, like people who work 16-hour days or 10? How would they fit that in?
That's definitely difficult. So, well, you know, when you've got to, you know, if the job demands that you work at that time, I think it's definitely better to meditate than to not to meditate. So it's, you know, I think we have to release that. You know, of course, there are optimal times to meditate, but then it's also if you are used to doing those 16-hour days and your best time, you know, when you feel most relaxed is the afternoon. Afternoon is also a great time to meditate. Generally, you know, the junctures between day and night, night and day, these junctures, the sages used to call them Sandhi Prakash. Literally, Sandhi Prakash means the meeting of the lights, which is beautiful. And whether it's dawn from night turning into day or day turning into night, those two points are wonderful times for contemplation, meditation. Why? Because you can really feel the shift in, you know, it's a time when it's a transitional time. And when there's that kind of transition, it's really when you become still, you can become the witness. We can become really access the wisdom of the observer self at that time, and your meditation becomes very dynamic because you can feel the change, but you know that you are unchanging. You know, you can really get in touch with that eternal principle. So, well, if you can't do it in the morning, then find some time in the afternoon, 4, 5, 6. Those are all beautiful times to meditate. And if you can't do that, then any time, really, that if you do it with regularity, You know, the key is really building the regularity to meditate so that, you know, it's just like when the clock hits a certain time, you start feeling hungry, and every day you kind of have your lunch around the similar time. You're training your body to secrete the enzymes, the digestive enzymes, at a certain time when you eat at a regular interval. So that's the same thing with meditation. And so if you build a habit, and it does take time, you know, scientists have been studying habits, and I think they said 66 days. The latest thing is the 66 days when it becomes a habit becomes really ingrained. And so, you know, it may take time, but it's so worth it because then you really, your whole being is like ready for meditation, you know, at that particular time. And also if you, you know, sit at a specific spot, same place, same time to meditate, it's even more powerful, you know. So I highly recommend whatever time you choose that you pick it, you stick to it, and build a regular practice around it.
Awesome. And one more thing, do the people of India have that particular way of, as far as making sure that they're okay in that way, do they have that integrated with inside their structure, their government structure for the people, you know, so their work isn't interfering with their school of thought?
Oh, do you mean that they create like work schedules that allows for this, you mean? That allows for meditation specifically?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think that India is, you know, modern India is, you know, it's a government just like, you know, many governments in the world. And I'm not sure if my meditation is their priority, unfortunately, you know, but they do have a department called Ayush, which is wonderful. And I believe it started, you know, the current Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, is a very spiritually inclined person, you know, and so he does meditate, he does do yoga, he instated the International Day of Yoga, and so I think he really sees that heritage, that wisdom heritage they have is one of their greatest assets. And so I think, you know, he created and he's giving more importance to Ayush, which is also the department that, you know, there is a whole council of Vedas or Ayurvedic doctors and yogis. And so, you know, he does listen to them. And so that's a great sign, you know. I'm not sure if they have evolved enough to really across the board, like implement that. But it is in their culture, you know. So I see, although, of course, the youngsters and, the modern people who don't believe in this stuff are there too, you know. So it's really individual's choice to, you know, if they do choose to prioritize meditation, to, choose a profession or choose their work schedule in a way that they can really weave this in. So it's not mandated by the government, unfortunately, but they do encourage. I think they're encouraging more the use of Ayurvedic medicines because it's very cost-effective. And also meditation is also cost-effective. I mean, look at all the cost of psychiatric drugs in this country and how expensive it is and how it does not really address the cause. You know, meditation really does address the cause because it creates a healthier, clearer thinking mind, a more rational mind. Every faculty of the human being that is evolutionary in nature is amplified when you meditate. And all the faculties that are against evolution is subsides through meditation, because meditation is nothing but putting the light of awareness, and awareness amplifies and grows, you know, and brings the life out of everything it touches. So I think it's a very smart move by any government, I think, to encourage meditation because it makes the people smarter, sharper.
Great answer. So, well, Jet, thank you for calling in. Did you have any other questions?
Oh no. Actually, I'm enjoying the show tonight, and I love like this show, how it's going, and congratulations to you and also to your guests as well, and also on this coming at the end of this month on the 30th. I have my show, Agriculture and Manufacturing University, presenting Culture and Industry, And I definitely appreciate the show tonight because it definitely refers to culture being practical to industry for people's lives.
Fabulous. Okay. That's great to know. Thank you. So let us know when to tune in to your show. What?
It will be on June 30th on that Wednesday, 9:30 p.m. And it will be Agriculture and Manufacturing University presenting culture and industry.
Thank you. Okay, and we appreciate your call. And now we have caller 8 in the queue. Caller 8, can you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hello? Caller 8? All right, you're on the line. Please speak up.
Hello?
Yes, how you doing? My name is Curtis Johnson. I'm from Downeytown, PA. I'm just calling to tell you, Lena Blue, that I'm really enjoying your show. And I got a lot of information out of it. And for you to keep up the good work. I do have one question I want to ask the guest, though. Is there any type of herbs that you can take for a person that gets like a lot of cramps?
Cramps.
You know, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think ashwagandha, which is Withenia somnifera in Latin. Ashwagandha is a fantastic herb for cramps, and it's a nervine tonic, you know. But I would say, you know, more than, first of all, check to make sure that you're hydrating enough, you know, and and also you make sure that you stretch enough, you know, and because herbs are not just meant to be like the miracle pill, you know, it has to be inside of a lifestyle. And so those things are very important as well. You know, you're cramping probably due to lack of potassium also, mineral, you know, lack. So you might need to, you know, have a banana or, you know, get enough potassium and make sure you're getting enough. How many glasses of water do you drink a day? You know, keep track of that. Because that is very important. If you're cramping, most likely it's due to a little bit of dehydration. Many of us are like chronically, you know, slightly dehydrated and we don't know it. We forget to drink water. So definitely do that. And then take ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is also great for combating stress. It is great, especially for men. It's an immunomodulator. It's great for immunity. It has a great, you know, impact on the nervous system as well. Mm. So, you know, it might be if you tend towards fatigue, you know, ashwagandha is a wonderful herb. But I would say just start, you know, don't just like take it blindly, tons of it, but just start with like maybe one tablet in the morning and afternoon. But usually, you know, in Ayurveda, we never just prescribe single herb. It's like we look at the whole person, we do an in-depth interview, and then we want to find out what are your imbalances. Look at the holistic pattern of, like, what are the imbalances? And then we give, you know, a formula, because a formula of herbs has plus, like, a, you know, if one herb is hot, then another herb is slightly cool to help bring the check and balance. You know, you see, because the human body works in a balance. So that's why the pharmaceutical drugs often create so many side effects, because there is not a check and balance built into it, you know. So, you know, we want to do this within the context of, okay, what's the root cause? You know, what's the root cause that's causing this? And maybe you're not getting enough sleep. Maybe you're not getting enough hydration. You know, maybe you're not stretching enough. And maybe you're not also breathing in a way that is, you know, diaphragmatic and bringing you enough oxygen. And, you know, so all those things make a huge difference, you know, not just the herbs that you ingest. So, yeah, keep that in mind.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Absolutely.
All right, great question. Okay, now we have caller 9 in the queue. Caller 9, can you please tell us your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, this is Offset Akun Ray. Hi,
hello.
Hi.
Hello. We're great. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm just listening at your show, and I'm liking everything that I hear. And one thing that I did want to add, when it came to you talking about the Hindu deities and the Buddhism deities, a good point stood out when it comes to, like, religion. And one thing that I had discovered a long time ago, when it comes to religion, it all boils down to the same thing, if you really think about it. If you really look at the aspects that each religion has, it all boils back to one universal tone. And we deal in ancient Egypt, we dealt with nature and the divinity of sacred wisdom and right knowledge and right science. And a lot of these religions I noticed growing up, a lot of the stuff that is duplicated or taken out or altered, if you really look at it, all of it really comes from Egypt. And one thing that I learned that a lot of people don't know about, Brahma, Buddha, Vishnu, all of these deities were originally women, and they were changed to men later on. So I found it interesting, and I'm like, who left out that story that these men that they're calling gods were originally women? So I think it's just interesting, you know, and meditation is my main method. I used to do yoga a lot, too, and yoga comes from Egypt. It does not originally come from India. It originally comes from Egypt. It was passed down to India and later on Buddhism and Hinduism and everything else. But one thing that I do love about meditation, it allows you to open up those chakra portals. It allows you to activate your third eye, and it allows you to, you know, I've been able to experience a lot of things, astral projection, and, you know, once you get close to that connection and you really open up those chakras, you're able to see things with the third eye that the two physical eyes cannot see. And Buddhism teaches you that there's nothing outside of yourself. And my wonderful master teacher, Malachi the York, he taught us that as well. There's nothing outside of self. So I have a saying that heaven does not exist. It's not a place. It's a state of mind. And my goal is not to take people away from religion and what they believe. You believe what you believe at the end of the day. But I like to stick with the facts. And the facts of it all is that heaven is within. There's nothing outside of that one universal source. So I'm really enjoying this topic, and I'm glad I got to chime in. And congratulations to everyone that's on here tuning in, all the hosts and the audience. And it's a good show. Thank you for this topic.
And thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. Do you want to tell everyone when you will have your next episode?
Yes, my next episode will be on the 22nd at 9:30, and the topic will be the emasculation of the black man in America. So it's really deep, and we're going to have a lot of fun with that. So please tune in.
All right, you will. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And now we have the final track, the iconic Grammy Award-nominated reggae vocalist group, Morgan Heritage.
They want us to stay blind as a bat, while they move sly as a fox. Oh boy, yes sir. Yeah. I tell you, few people can see it. Many are blind to it. A change is on the way. Things will no longer be the same. Oh no. Hear me now. All eyes on America. People and places want to be just like America. And I can't understand why, when you have beautiful places like Dubai. Oh yeah. Lies and propaganda, they speak of Africa. I tried from Nairobi to Addis Ababa and find the truth for myself. I behold so much in school they have never told. I'm like a much
people of Jamaica don't realize that reggae music is the savior, preserving the knowledge of our former selves. Take the youth them in a Gambia. If you never know, you'd have been living born and raised in a Jamaica too. Them love the culture, Rastafari culture. Them live the liberty as well, yeah. Earth is the love that fullness there are. So I have the right to live where I'm loved and celebrated.
See how they doing the things over there. And if you thought there's something to fear, just some time back when you was a little dad, and they said don't do this, a child don't do that, please. Maybe you said you do, maybe you said you don't, but then you figured it out, so life moved on. Yeah, to be the days of innocent fun. Now we're living with purpose in our kingdom. What's the problem? What you say? What's the beat? Cause the future is determined today.
We're back, and now we have caller 10 in the queue. Caller 10, can you please tell us your name and where you're calling from? Caller 10?
All right, caller 10, you got 5 seconds. All right, and we're going to let that caller go. All right, let's get to the final thoughts. Yes, sir.
Okay, so Marika, would you like to... share your final thoughts that you want to give to the audience?
Well, I believe, you know, my mission, I feel, is to get yoga also out of the fitness box, because I want the world to see what a deep, incredibly transformative discipline, what I call yoga with a capital Y, is. It is truly about the complete evolution, and it's really reaching that pinnacle of evolution of what we're here on this planet to achieve, you know. So it's really self-realization, which I believe is really, you know, it's why we're here and all the lessons we're here to learn, right? And so I would love the world to embrace yoga as that. And Ayurveda is everything that you don't get perhaps through the yoga path. It's you know, when to eat, what to eat, how to structure your day, it's so practical, and yet, and also there's such, it's a divine wisdom that is really, you know, so practical and actionable in nature, and there's so much wisdom behind it. And so I would encourage anyone who is interested, there's so much free information out there to study, to begin to educate yourself, and both these disciplines are about self-knowledge, self-awareness. I'm a big believer in knowing yourself, reading the book of your body, your mind. This is the path to wisdom and self-awareness. And so much of the attention now in the digital age is just outwards, and it takes us out of our wisdom source. So, and we tend to discount the wisdom of our body, and we don't listen enough. And I think it's important for everyone to at least take some time to slow down and really listen, read the book of your own, you know, of your own body, try to understand your psychology also, your patterns, and this will start to create transformation, because when you put the attention, all change starts with awareness. And so both disciplines are about awakening with the spotlight, your own awareness, and getting empowered so you can create the changes and shifts that you know you need to make in order to get to your next stage of evolution. So I think that's really my main message and the message of my book, The Yoga of Personal Development. I wrote that book because I saw there were a gazillion books on the physical yoga, how to do a downward dog, how to do an upward dog, how to do a sun salute. All that is there, and gazillion classes are there. But the subtler inner dimension of yoga, that is not so talked about. And it's as if the whole world just believes yoga is about tying your body into a pretzel, you know, looking like some Instagram photo. But it's not about that, right? It's really so much about this self-inquiry. It's a quest for your liberation, and it starts with awareness. So if I'm allowed to mention my website or, you know, how people can find me, is that okay to let your audience know? So my website is Visionary Yoga, and really that's my movement, is really yoga as personal development. And we do physical yoga, but taking it beyond just, you know, rolling up the mat is not the end of yoga. You know, that's the beginning of yoga with a capital Y. And my book, which became an international bestseller, The Yoga of Personal Development, is really geared towards actually business people, because I think that you know, when you're in business, it's such a difficult thing. You must grow yourself in order to grow your business, especially if you're the owner of that business, you know. And I think the degree to which you can grow yourself is very much sometimes the degree to which you can grow your business. And it's a tough environment right now. So I recommend that just as a resource that's maybe not the straight-up business book, but it's really geared for people who want to improve their mindset, improve their health at the same time, and deepen their self-knowledge in order to grow themselves. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn as Visionary Yoga, on Facebook as well as Visionary Yoga. And I do publish a lot of videos and inspirational content, Ayurveda and the inner dimension of yoga. So I would love to be in conversation with you beyond this wonderful radio show. And thank you so much, Lena, for having me. It's been really, I love the questions. I love the inquiry. And I hope that we can continue to grow in this way.
Absolutely. And now I think it's Ngozi time.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Mariko. I love you, girlie, because you talk about healing, the prospects of healing and development. Tonight, a lot of people shared their views, and that's what O&E Dynasty has always been about. We're here to save lives, and a lot of times with a lot of the callers, they're trying to give to the air a sense of dignity and worth that is priceless. And we want to thank you, Mariko, tonight, and I appreciate you. And I will be following you. I love that. And, of course, Lena Blue. Congratulations on your 8th O&E syndicated station all-time connection record. You know, 4th consecutive. You're doing a great job here at O&E Dynasty. Tomorrow night, it's down on business, strictly business, with E. Davis, 9:30 Eastern, daylight time on these O&E stations. And, of course, Beverly Nixon is advertising to O&E, which is Oladeli and goes into prosecution, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment@wordpress.com, as well as in Ngozi Primetime 1 at bevnet.com. We're in Ngozi Time both for Twitter and Instagram. Oladeli and Ngozi at Pinterest and Google+. Oladeli and Malewa Ngozi at Facebook, as well as our business page, Awakening the Goddess, as well as the historic Beverly Nation Online Radio, established 2013. And any comments or suggestions to our wonderful program tonight, That goes for my and gmail.com, and I am the international internet radio producer and shrinee, as well as your mother and father's favorite producer. Oladeli Malewa Ngozi saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. And the soundtrack of your lives tonight was brought to you by my favorite roots reggae group, and I can't wait to see them in Philadelphia area in Glenside, Pennsylvania in August. The name of the group is called Morgan Heritage, and I love them so much. Lena, you got 2 minutes left to go in the program.
Thank you, Brother O. Again, I just want to, you know, most humbly thank Mariko Hirakawa for joining us tonight and sharing all the information that, you know, she's accumulated and being so selfless to share it with all of us and so freely. And I just want to thank her from the bottom of my heart for sharing that information. I took notes, and everything. So I thank you again. And I wanted to encourage everyone, if you are looking for more information about Ayurvedic healing, please look out for her book, Yoga of Personal Development, Enlightening Lessons on Leadership, Peak Performance, and Living a Life of No Regrets. And also, if you want to understand your body some more, take a look at the book, Your Body is Telling You to Love Yourself by Liz Bourbeau. Excellent book. And a book that I have referenced, my knowledge, is Ayurvedic Healing, A Comprehensive Guide by Dr. David Frawley. Thank you for listening tonight and joining in the conversation. I sincerely hope you are listening to Mariko explain Ayurveda, and I hope it has expanded your knowledge as it relates to the treatment of your body. Feel free to reach out to me via my website at awakeningthegoddessshow.squarespace.com, where you can find this episode and others. Lastly, remember, we must learn to love everyone, everything, and everywhere, by John Randolph Price. Good night and take good care.